Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the Planning Commission special meeting Tuesday, November 15th to order. Could I please get a roll call?
Commissioner Keane?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner Martin?
Here.
Chair George?
Here. And if you could please stand and follow Commissioner Keane for the flag salute. We'll move on to agenda review. Do the commissioners wish to revise the agenda tonight? No? Okay. Hearing none, we'll keep the agenda the same and we'll move to community comments. This is when we invite the public to come speak on items not on tonight's agenda. Did anyone wish to come speak on items not on tonight's agenda? No? Okay. Hearing none, we'll close the community comments and move to written communications. And I don't believe we received any new written communication.
None this evening.
Okay. So we'll move ahead to the consent agenda. We have two sets of minutes to approve tonight from October 4th and November 1st. Do the commissioners have any revisions, corrections, or comments on these minutes?
Could we separate them because I think we're going to...
Okay. Okay. We'll start with the October 4th minutes. Do the commissioners have any questions, comments? Changes.
I move to approve the minutes of the October 4th meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. And we'll move on to the November 1st minutes.
I move to adopt.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And Commissioner Keane?
Abstain.
Yeah. Well, abstain because he wasn't here. Motion carries. Okay. And that takes us right into public hearing item 8A. The continued consideration of vesting tentative parcel map 15-001 and planned unit development 15-001, subdivision of one lot into four lots and construction of four one-bedroom single-family attached residences. The location is 1177 Ash Street and the applicant is Jeffrey Emmerich. And if we could please get a staff report.
Yes, good evening, Chair George and members of the commission. Proposed is a parcel map to subdivide a 9,500 square foot property into four parcels and a planned unit development to construct four new one bedroom townhomes. The site is located on Ash Street behind an existing residence in the multifamily zoning district and is accessed by an 18 foot wide easement on the east side of the property. A 15 inch diameter coastline oak tree is located on the eastern property line that is proposed to remain. The subdivision would create four parcels with an average lot size of 2,360 square feet. The parcels would be developed with two separate buildings containing two townhomes connected over a shared property line. All units would have the same design, with 875 square feet of living space on two levels and a 240 square foot single car garage. A total of four guest parking spaces are also provided, which is two spaces above the development code requirement. The Planning Commission considered this project on July 5th and continued the item to a date uncertain, directing the applicant to revise the architecture for Architectural Review Committee review and recommendation. The applicant modified the plans based on Planning Commission comments to include a hipped roof, entry walkway, and second floor storage area, provide a 10-foot setback for parcel four at the southern boundary, integrate low-water use plants in the landscape plan as suggested by the ARC, and removed the basketball half-court. The ARC considered these modifications on September 19th and recommended approval with conditions to widen the fin on the backside of the structure and to include plant species in the landscaping that can thrive with limited sun exposure and planter area. This slide shows what the elevations look like after making those changes, specifically to the roof line and then widening of that back fin. The proposed colors and materials are the same, with beige and brown stucco for the body, dark green for the trim, front door, and garage door. The siding at the rear of the building is corrugated steel in a brown rust color, and I do have a sample of that material here. Can pass that to them. Thank you. The proposed small lot single-family attached housing project is allowed in the multifamily zoning district with an approved plan unit development. The four one-bedroom units have a density equivalency of 2 units, which is the maximum allowed on the site based on the parcel size and development code allowance for rounding up. The applicant is requesting deviation from lot size, lot width, lot depth, and setback requirements through this PUD process. And then this slide illustrates how the lots are laid out. The PUD process allows greater flexibility in design for projects that include a more efficient use of land and meet open space requirements. In this case, the applicant proposes to substitute the 2 additional guest parking spaces in lieu of providing the required amount of common and usable open space. This slide shows the calculations for how much open space is required for this project. And this slide shows how much open space the applicant is proposing. The percentage of private open space is greater than what the development code requires, while the common and usable open space percentages are less. The applicant justifies the 3.1% reduction in usable open space by the additional parking, arguing that parking would likely be more valuable to the tenant profile than passive open space. If the Planning Commission determines that the 3.1% reduction in usable open space, or 293 square feet, is a minor deviation given the 2 additional parking spaces, then the project can be considered compliant with open space requirements and the planning and development can be approved. Regarding the issue brought up by local residents of commercial truck parking in the neighborhood, the police department has indicated that a city council resolution defining the locations and types of vehicles associated with restricted parking is needed before specific parking restrictions can be enforced. So in closing, the proposed project will construct additional residential units in an area identified in the general plan for high density residential development. Given the unique smaller lot and unit size, it is anticipated that these homes will help fill a niche in the community and will be affordable by design. As proposed, the project meets development code requirements for a planning and development with the Commission's interpretation that minor deviations from open space standards can be offset by the inclusion of additional parking spaces. With this determination, staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution approving the subdivision and PUD as proposed. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Kelly. Do the commissioners have any questions for staff?
No.
Okay. And we'll have invite the applicant to come speak.
Hello, Jeffrey Emmerich, Gehring Taylor & Associates. Thank you for having me back to show you this project one more time. A few things I wanted to talk about. One is density. We're not asking for any increase in density on this project. The four single-bedroom units are two density units, just the same as two residences could be two density units. Understand that the residences could be three-bedroom or four-bedroom units. They'd have a requirement for two parking spaces. And so you wouldn't get as much, I think, as what we're trying to propose here. Second thing is parking. We're providing additional parking over what would be required for this type of project. There's a total of eight parking spaces on this project, four in garages and four guest units. As part of the change in the architecture, we've also added considerable storage in the unit over the walkway that hopefully will get people moving stuff into the storage and out of their garage so parking can be in the garage. And there is a CCNR requirement for parking in the garage. Third, the trash. We're providing areas for the trash not only during the week outside of the house, behind fences, in the private open space area, but a place to put those trash cans on garbage collection day. And it's a spot that's been worked out with the South County Sanitary. This is where they wanted to do it. This is how they wanted to do this. And I've had other projects before you on Ash Street, and I know that the whole idea of trash and the space that it takes up on the street is really a big problem. And I think this is a way, an easy way, for this project to serve that. And so I just wanted to show that we're doing that, we're looking at this type of thing, and we think that this kind of a project with the single-bedroom units is something that's needed in the city. It's affordable by design. It's something I think it's a good starter home for individuals or possibly a retirement home for somebody. Those are the points I wanted to make. If there's any questions, one last thing. We've kept the boxy unit as part of the architecture because I wanted to have an area that was hidden from view for solar panels. This is, each unit now has the same area to do that. The hip roof has, because of the way it's set up, there's two of the units will have a hip pointing southerly, and two of the units will have it pointing in a northerly direction. So this flat roof area there that is circled by a parapet will be a spot for the solar panels for the units. That's it. Any questions from you?
Do commissioners have any questions for the applicant?
I have one. I know you indicated that these were to be affordable housing.
Yes.
Do you know what the projected price is going to be on these?
You know, it's been a couple of years since we started the project, but we were looking at these things in the low to mid 300,000 range. You know, that was the initial thought on this, which is, you know, cheaper than any new thing in the city of Rio Grande right now.
Okay. That's all.
Commissioner Martin, did you have any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Emmerich. When you talk about the solar panels, are you going to be pre-wiring or anything? Is there going to be suitable or available, or are you...
Well, pre-wiring is required by code.
Right.
And so, yes, they will be pre-wired, and the question now is whether, you know, if we're going to be able to actually install them.
Like what method and what company and how they get paid and stuff, that has not yet been determined. But
No, but it's just a matter of what we're going to be able to install them as part of the area.
But the wiring is...
It will be there.
Installed in there.
The whole idea is for the units to be really as green as possible.
Right.
And one of the things is the Core 10 steel is extremely green. It doesn't take any maintenance. It uses no paint. And, you know, it's a renewable resource.
Very good. Thank you.
Commissioner Mack, did you have any questions for the applicant?
Yeah, a few. If you can go to the site plan for a moment. If you can help me, I'm looking all over on my site plan. It might be on a different sheet. I was going to reference note 16, which was the designated trash area.
Yes.
Pickup area. I can't see it on the plan as in terms of reference note designating where that is.
On that plan, you're looking, it would be in the top left corner of parcel one. It's just as you enter the site, there's a widening there of the drive area before
Thank
the landscaping
you.
Starts.
I was looking on the street, seeing if the bins were going all the way out to the street, if it was near the mailboxes. Thank you. And then my second question, is there a requirement that the state requires in terms of the amount of driveway being impervious versus pervious? And is that a requirement for this project?
One, no, it's not a requirement. It is useful in the stormwater quality calculations to have impervious surfaces. Now, in the city of Arroyo Grande, one of the, as part of the stormwater quality report, if it is in an area that does not drain off the site at all, then it is exempt from water quality standards. So effectively, all of Zone A in the city, which is all through this area, is exempt because you can't, you don't get to let water drain off your site whenever you're developing. It's net zero. And that's with all the projects we're doing in there.
And it seems to me you're taking that water and you're storing it underground underneath the driveway. All of it or some of it?
Well, it's not so much storage. It's percolating.
Okay.
This site is sand, and as in other sites around here, it's hard to make a puddle. It just soaks right up, soaks the water right up. So in this design, the paved area is calculated to be going into the underground retention system. And the drainage from the home will go into the backyard and drain there.
Thank you. One last question. When we continued this project last time, we had put a request in to provide an updated color board, materials board. Was that provided, or is that available to pass amongst the commissioners? And that's all my questions.
Vice Chair Keene, did you have any questions for the applicant?
Could you, on the elevations of the houses, could you point out exactly where that solar is going to be? Is it going to be on the new slope, or is there an area that you said something was flat?
Here, if you look at these elevations, what you'll see is there is a box shape there that's still there. That area then will have room up there for a possible panel.
Right there?
I just had some housekeeping questions.
Yes, ma'am.
So are you do you have a joint maintenance agreement? So will it be an HOA that will monitor that, or who enforces the
There'll be a joint maintenance agreement for the areas within the project and maintenance on the, there's a joint maintenance agreement with the property in the front to maintain the access. Generally, a homeowners association, I never see a need for it unless there's property to own,
right.
Like an open space that they need to own. Otherwise, you've got four people here setting up a corporation, maintaining that, and the insurance for it is really an added expense.
So the CC&Rs are going to be built into the joint maintenance agreement then?
The joint maintenance agreement is part of the CC&Rs.
Okay, and who enforces that?
The property owners themselves.
Okay, so they have to all get along then, right? Because you don't have
That's absolutely correct, right?
Okay.
Commissioner George, if they had a homeowners association, there'd be board members. There'd be a president and a vice president and a secretary.
I completely understand. There's four homes.
They have to get along, right, whether there's an HOA or they're just themselves.
Okay. On 52C, it says the annual maintenance notification indicating that all water quality treatment, runoff retention, and peak flow management controls have been maintained and are functioning as designed. So who reports that? It says it needs to be reported annually.
Well, those are post-construction BMP reporting, and that would be required by the homeowners. Okay, but in this case, since we're in Zone A, we're exempt from stormwater quality regulations, and there will be no post-construction BMPs, and that's an irrelevant condition.
So it's in there, but it doesn't need to be in there, is what you're saying?
It has no relevancy.
Okay. Are these homes set up for gray water systems?
They will be, yes.
Fully functioning or just plumbed?
Just plumbed.
Okay. And I remember at our last meeting we had talked about street lighting, and I didn't see any on the site plan. Will there be lighting for that long drive?
No.
No.
There will be no lighting other than what's on the units themselves.
This might be a joint question for staff and the applicant. It says at the end of page 4, right after the graph chart, it says, as shown in the table above, the proposed project meets most requirements. How do we determine what most requirements is? Because from what I'm seeing, it doesn't, unless we adjust the entire project to be a planned unit development. So I'm not sure if that's a question for you or for staff.
I can address that.
Okay, thank you, Kelly.
So it meets the maximum density requirements. It meets the front setback requirement. It meets the lot coverage and maximum building height. Those are where they're in compliance.
Only if we adjust it with a PUD, correct?
Right. So that table says, you know, in the far column where it says notes, that's where you can see, you know, whether the code has been met or whether there's adjustment.
Yeah. Right. And those are all my questions. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time to answer that.
Thank you for your help.
Did the commissioners have any more questions before I open it to public comment? No? Okay. And at this time, I'll open it up to public comment. If you wish to speak on this item and you fill out the speaker slip, feel free to come up. So, Dory Rogers.
Thank you. I was here on November 2nd when it was continued, and I was, maybe I'm not as familiar with the procedure as I would like to be, but I think I'm getting a handle on this now. It seems that in this whole process that started from the time the property was built to now, there has been deception every single step of the way, including right this moment as we stand here, and there is no sign on the property saying that this meeting is being held. On November 2nd, it was continued. The sign stayed there a couple of more days. And I mean, here we are. We're fortunate to have people here who care about our neighborhood and our quality of life. And I hope that we all get an opportunity to speak. It seems that our voice is, we're given the opportunity to speak, But I'm not sure, really, if you're hearing a perspective that's a human's perspective. Mr. Emmerich, he wants to make money. The city wants to, you know, collect more taxes. But here we have, I have a home that we're getting ready to put up for sale. We face this property directly. I just got it appraised. It's just under $600,000. That is not going to be the price of our home if you have four low-income pieces of property facing us and taking all the privacy we have left in this very, very dense neighborhood. $300,000 for four one-bedroom low-income homes, which will probably be owned by maybe one property owner, and he'll rent them out, and they'll turn around, and we'll have eight cars packed there, and we'll have trucks coming through for garbage, and oh, good, we got rid of the basketball court, but we added more space for more cars. We live in this neighborhood. This is the quality of our life. We are impacted. You've heard it all. You've heard about the street. You've heard about the trucks, the work trucks that are parked on there, because we have all these apartment complexes here, and they have nowhere to park their work trucks. We heard last time on November 2nd, when it was asked by the commission, have you addressed this issue with the Arroyo Grande Police Department? And the answer was, well, I anticipated that question, and I just talked with them this week, and they said that they probably wouldn't do anything about it. They wouldn't cite anybody for parking their trucks on the street, because then they would have to do it for the entire neighborhood. And we want to do it, I think I need to quote him, in a very educational way. And I'm thinking, I'm an educator. I know what it means to get educated. And you listen, and you take a class, and you understand what's going on. And if you do something that's inappropriate or wrong, you have a consequence for that. You were also asked a question about the colors. And the response was, well, printers don't always really show the color. My goodness sakes, you know, this is year 2016. I think printers can give a genuine color of what the tile is going to be, what the walls are going to look
Rogers,
like.
Ms. Rogers, you have 3 minutes, so I'm just going to ask you to wrap it up.
Thank you. So we, I think, as a community, would like you to consider that we have homes that are valued. We have a lifestyle that's valued. We are impacted. This is not the place to put four one-bedroom, low-income, poorly built, maximized homes on a property that is passing by a home that has a driveway right there with small children there. They're selling their home, too, by the way, because of this catastrophe that is in front of us. It has not been a business of integrity here. We have been deceived over and over and over again, and we would just like the property developed in a way that is appropriate. Two homes in the back is what fits back there. Everything else is inappropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Did anyone else wish to speak on tonight's item? No? Okay, then I'll close the public comment and bring it back to the commissioners for comments. Commissioner Martin, did you want to start tonight on comments on this item?
I'm going to keep it brief. I'm a little bit under the weather here, but I thought it was important to attend. I think the first thing, the most important, is I agree with applicant and staff that the reduction in open space to be used and for off-street parking or offset by off-street parking is a minor deviation and is appropriate in this. And in that respect, I can support the project. And in response to the person who spoke, I do listen, I do hear, I do believe that I am sensitive to the neighbors and the community and what really needs to be done. Parking is an issue. It was an issue before this project. It's going to be an issue after this project. But there are other issues as well in my mind, and the community is in dire need of affordable, smaller housing units, and the entire neighborhood and area is zoned for multifamily for this type of development. It's always tough when you have a nice little open space that now gets built up and developed. I think that the applicant has done a pretty good job of providing adequate parking off-street to certainly minimize the impact of parking on the street and what's going to go on. I certainly do openly acknowledge, as I know that my fellow commissioners do, that Ash Street is arguably one of the most impacted streets in the community. But I think the issue of parking and enforcement and some of these other things is not appropriate to have them shouldered by this applicant, and what he really is seeking to do, in my mind, is legal and appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Martin. Commissioner Fowler Payne, do you have any comments?
Well, according to the color board that we received, it shows it as a corrugated metal, and yet we've passed around a piece of, whatever you want to call that?
Flat.
Yeah. Rusted. So, I don't think that our packet had been updated. I don't know if so I don't know which way you're going to proceed with the exterior on the units. I'm not favoring of the style, but everybody's got their own choice. I was just wondering if there was, to accommodate for the next door neighbor, is there room in this along the side of that driveway to do a landscape buffer between the proposed units that are facing the adjacent neighbors? If so, that might, buffer the appearance or give them a little more privacy than just looking into a fence that's, I guess, been remodeled or repatched or whatever you did with it. And so it didn't really clearly say, I know the driveway is 18 feet, but I don't know if there's enough room there to put some kind of tall, fast-growing landscape along there to give them that privacy. And I don't know if that's going to help the neighbors at all, but at least it might buffer some of the noise and the lights from their porches so it's not shining in their yard. But that's my only comment.
Thank you, Commissioner Fowler Payne. Commissioner Mack, comments this evening?
Well, I'd like to start my comments off by reiterating this isn't the first time we've seen the project. We saw this project back in July, and a number of people came out and spoke at the podium, and there's a lot of comments from the commissioners. And what I see with the revised project and what's come back, the applicant's listened to everybody, and he's listened, more importantly, to the Planning Commission. He's added more parking. Parking's an issue. He's resolved the trash. He's met with the trash company, determined a pickup point and how the trash is going to work. He took out the basketball court, which was a problem with the neighbors. He adjusted the setbacks, specifically the setbacks that I was concerned being the rear property, and made them all equal, and all the lots look great, in my opinion, in terms of lot coverage and open space and private open space and setbacks to adjoining neighbors. There's 25 feet, 26 feet, 26.33 feet to the neighbor's house. That's a significant setback to the homes that are in question. The density, it meets all the density requirements. I don't see how we can deny this applicant not building what's allowed. And as far as parking, there is an issue on Ash Street, and I would really like to make that a separate agenda item to deal with parking on Ash Street. But the applicant's gone above and beyond the parking requirements for this project. And each unit, each one-bedroom unit, has a enclosed parking stall, a garage, and a guest stall. In my mind, a one-bedroom unit, the most that's going to live there is two people in one bedroom. You have one parking stall per person. I see it more problematic if you put in two single-family residences back there with three bedrooms each, or four bedrooms. You have more potential for more adults living there and more cars. I think this is the most sensitive design solution when it comes to parking. I find it hard to find anything wrong with the plan now that he's come back and really listened and addressed all of our concerns. And that's my comments.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keane. Comments?
I don't have a lot to add. When we had the meeting on July 5th, there was a discussion about whether the sewer line going out to the street would be maintained by the city or, and I don't see that addressed in the conditions of approval. Maybe I just overlooked it. Could you help me, Kelly?
If you don't mind giving me a moment to look it up, to keep
okay.
going with the questions.
That's fine.
Or comment.
Yeah, there was some discussion about it, and I just wanted it addressed one way or the other. What we did. I like the changes that they did to the architecture. I was one of them that objected to the flat square box. I like the roof lines now. It helps soften it. I'm like Commissioner Mack. The developer has gone through and virtually changed everything that we asked and discussed. This property is owned multifamily, and that property is entitled to this density, and all of our things in the development code and that lead us to what the city is trying to accomplish for housing and to get more low-income housing. And that doesn't mean that these are going to be low-income. It means that the people won't be paying as much for them as they would. And so you could get some retired people in there that just need a smaller place, not anyway. So I'm ready to move forward with this. I would like to have some discussion about this thing, because I really don't think that the city should maintain sewer lines on private property. And that's what I'm getting to about the discussion we had at the other meeting. Now, I don't know what happened on November 1st, whether there was any discussion about it or not.
Commissioner Keene, I'm looking for the specific condition you're looking
it's
for.
Number 86.
Generally speaking, though, that the subdivision agreements will require the required easements, and the city will maintain the main, and the property owners will maintain the laterals.
That's typically how it's done.
Yeah, I understand that the developer is going to install it. I'm talking about maintaining it. That's because there was a something in there that triggered this discussion at the first meeting, and I'm just not in favor of the city maintaining sewer lines on private property. That's all I have. Thank you.
Commissioner Fowler Payne, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, after reviewing the special conditions, number 22 and number 23 with regards to the oak tree, since we've already had problems on previous development sites where the developers rather pay the penalty and cut the tree than deal with it, can we have some kind of a restriction in here that someone from the city be there when the tree is trimmed so that we know that it's not cut down like it was further down Ash Street? Because this just tells how it needs to be done, but it's not monitoring that somebody's not going to cut it down and say, oh, gee, we made a mistake. I'll pay the $1,000 penalty and move on. I don't want that to happen again.
We could add something that the city's arborist must be notified if any tree trimming is to be any tree trimming to occur at this site. Would that satisfy?
Well, can you have something on there that states that the arborist needs to meet with whoever the tree trimmer is going to be to make sure he understands?
Sure.
That was one of the statements that we made on the other one. Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
I am a huge proponent of infill where we can. It's very important to me that people who come here have a place to live. That being said, I don't believe that this property is the right property for that infill. And the main reason is I believe that the residents that live here should have precedence over people coming in to become a resident. And I hope that when someone comes in to become a resident, we protect their rights too. This property, for me, is very complicated because it is mixed family zoning. However, unless we adjust it to be a PUD, it only meets 3 of the 10 requirements. So as it stands, without the Planning Commission allowing it to adjust to a PUD, it doesn't meet not even half of the standards that the multifamily zoning district development standards have in place. In order for it to meet the planned unit development findings, I'm looking at page 3, planned unit development findings. Number 5 says that the proposed development as conditioned will not have a substantial adverse effect on surrounding property or the permitted use thereof and will be compatible with the existing and planned land use character of the surrounding area. And I do not believe that this project will have a substantial adverse effect on the surrounding areas. And for that reason, I cannot find this as a planned unit development. I could go on with trash and parking, but we've already said all of those items. The bottom line is, like I said, I truly believe in infill. I believe that we need to find homes, but the people that currently live there, especially the person living in the front residence there, planned on at maximum 2 homes behind them, not 4. And because they bought that home, knowing what would be behind there, for us to change it and increase the traffic on that road going back to those 4 homes, would be a detriment to that top residence. So unfortunately, on this item, I cannot support this project. And with that, I will entertain a motion.
Chair George, I just want to clarify the questions, the requests for modified conditions.
Okay, thank you.
To address Commissioner Keene's question regarding the maintenance, we'll modify condition approval number 87, which pertains to sewer laterals complying with engineering standards, and we'll add a maintenance provision there for the laterals. And condition number 96 is regarding the submittal of a tree preservation plan prior to the issuance of the grading permit, and will require notification and consultation prior to any tree trimming activity.
Could you repeat that 87? I wasn't clear as to who would be responsible.
The applicant shall consult with the Director of Public Works or representative prior to conducting any tree mitigation, tree.
Oh, I'm sorry, 87. The
activity.
Right?
Sorry, 87. All sewer laterals shall comply with engineering standards 6810, and maintenance shall be provided by the property owner.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, unless you want to discuss any further.
No, I move to approve the resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approving vesting tentative parcel map 15-001 and the plan unit development 15-001 located 1177 Ash Street with these additional conditions. Staff highlighted condition number 96. I'd like to kind of slash and include 22 in that because they kind of overlap and are related. I'm going to call it condition 22/96, where the city arborist will be notified or if and when the tree is scheduled to be trimmed. I think hopefully that whatever other appropriate wording needs to be included in there, both of those kind of highlight that that does not get missed. And then also add the additional condition 87 about the sewer laterals, the construction and maintenance by the property owner, long-term maintenance by property owner.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Could we please get a roll call vote?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Chair George?
No. And the motion carries 3-2. Public hearing 8B is a consideration of Development Code Amendment 15-001. The location is the Rio Grande Village area. The applicant is Verizon Wireless. It is recommended at this time that the Planning Commission continue this item to date certain of December 20th, 2016. Did the commissioners have any questions or comments regarding that?
I so move.
And I'll second that. Can we get a roll call vote on that one, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Chair George?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
Commissioner King?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
And the item will be continued to a date certain of December 20th. We're going to move on to non-public hearing items. 9A, the consideration of staff project 15-011, the review of draft scope of work for the 2016-2017 parking study. The location is citywide. And if we could please get a staff report.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair George, members of the Commission. So this is staff project 15-011, which is the review of the draft scope of work for the 2016-2017 parking study. So a little bit of background about this project. So the Planning Commission has previously directed city staff to investigate the deficiency of parking deficiencies in the city. Earlier this year in July, the City Council did prioritize this work effort and actually directed staff to solicit consultant services in order to carry on this project. And as you mentioned at the last meeting, we asked the question of when are we going to see this, and I mentioned it was going to come forward tonight. So tonight we do have the scope of work for the parking study in order to solicit those professional services. So as you'll note in your staff report, there's basically three main tasks and several subtasks. So here's the tentative scope of work. The top one is highlighted, and I'll go over that now. So under the existing conditions, data collection and analysis task, there's several different subtasks. The first is obviously the project kickoff, so meeting the consultant with city staff to go over kind of the initiation, what the consultant is going to be looking for from the city, what the city expects from the consultant. The second sub-task is the collect available data from studies, reports, et cetera. So this would be providing the consultant any previous parking studies or corridor development plans, things like that, that do talk about parking. The third item would be looking at the current parking policies, some of which, are included in your staff report with the general plan policies, et cetera. This would also include looking at the current supply and demand management, what the city is currently doing with regard to parking, looking at what our current regulations are in terms of being flexible, and looking at state and federal requirements and making sure that we're still meeting those as well. Field survey of example sites. So this is something that I've mentioned previously. Typically, parking studies look at specific districts, and whereas we're looking at this citywide holistically. But in order to still kind of replicate kind of a traditional parking study, it would be looking at some of these example sites, more of the compact residential developments, some of the commercial developments as well. Could be Arroyo Town Center, could be Grand and Elm Center. So trying to identify some of those sites to kind of use as the example sites, and then draw from that data citywide. The peak period counts is highlighted here. This is probably, from my perspective, the most important task, subtask in this overall number one, being that it actually does go out to these example sites and do vehicle counts, how the consultant would propose doing that, and seeing here's how many spaces are there, here's how many cars are there at these different times as we're doing these counts. So it does give us that quantifiable data, because we hear and we've experienced going to specific developments and having to drive around to find a parking space. So this will give us that quantifiable rather than anecdotal evidence moving forward. And then looking at the parking performance. So if we're seeing these example sites being 100% utilized at peak hours, is that meeting the performances, or are we seeing 85%, which would be something that we would like to kind of see, where there's some spots open but the majority of it's full, so that we're not wasting land? Or are we looking at 30%? So that's kind of the parking performance subtask on this item. Moving on to that second task, the future parking demand. So this is the consultant. We were looking at doing two kind of development projections: the short term, the 1 to 4 year, what do we expect in the next 1 to 4 years, and then the medium term, the 5 to 10 year range. And using that, the existing land use regulations that we have, the existing development plans that we have, so approved projects, and then the upcoming development proposals, so pipeline projects or any master plan for East Grand Avenue corridor, for example, it would be using that information to project out the short term and medium term development scenarios, and then utilizing the parking performance under sub task one to actually look at, in these upcoming development scenarios, are we going to be deficient, or are we going to be in a surplus, and kind of looking at that. Here's what we expect, and here's what we think based on some of this other information, and a lot of that other data sources are in the draft scope of work as well. And then the last and probably most important item is the parking standards recommendation. So being that we anticipate a consultant who does these type of studies for a living, to utilize all the data that's gathered and the information that we're projecting out to make recommendations on our current parking regulations, whether that be increasing the number required per a certain square footage of a certain use, whether that be increasing the number of parking spaces required, as several of the commissioners have mentioned, based on increases in the number of bedrooms in a residence, or whether that's, here's your current numbers are fine, but here's how you should administer them better. So we're kind of just tell us, experts, what you recommend on this. And they'll also consider other parking strategies in order to address maybe a deficit. So that would be certain parking demand strategies. Sometimes in our public parking lots, it could be actually enforcing payment at certain peak times in order to encourage other modes of travel. Utilizing shared parking between developments rather than providing each development its own parking on its own lot, so trying to maximize total land use, and then peak period parking, so other temporary overflow parking lots during those peak hours, things like that. I mean, really, the board's kind of clear on what you can recommend under this type of thing. So at this time, it's recommended that the Planning Commission actually review the draft scope of work. It's for you to kind of review and mold in accordance with how you see this project moving forward, and then provide feedback in order to address your concerns, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Matt. Do the commissioners have any questions? Commissioner Mack?
A couple comments. When it comes to commercial parking, a lot of times you'll have a developer come in and just have a shell. And then it's parked at the least possible general commercial count possible. Is a consultant going to take in consideration that flipping over time and becoming a percentage of restaurant use, for example? And how can we direct the consultant to look in the future? Because I see that happening. The trend is more and more eateries and restaurants, and then we're stuck with not having enough parking.
Yeah, I would definitely anticipate that being part of this study. Again, that goes back to kind of the recommendation on how to administer. So I would anticipate the, again, maybe if you have a shell and you don't have a use identified right now, you're currently requiring one space per 250 square feet of floor area, when really you should be doing one per 400, because that is a good midpoint between this use and that use, so it could kind of transition.
I guess what I'm getting at, not to interrupt you, is mm-hmm. when they're doing the survey, because I think that's a great thing, is doing surveys throughout the city, determining how these commercial, whether it's a strip mall or a shopping center, really look at, well, what percentage is being used for groceries, what percentage is being used for a restaurant, and what percentage is being used for general retail. That would be real helpful.
Yeah, and there are some surveys that, I mean, there's several different methods that you can do. You can just stand and count the number of cars that come in a driveway versus the cars that go out. You can actually do the license plate surveys and watch the people, see where they park and where they walk, and do that. You'll notice in the scope of work, I didn't necessarily clarify that. I kind of wanted to see what the consultants might propose in terms of, or if they provide multiple options and give us different price points that then, you know, the city council, when we take this to be awarded, could actually select from.
And another question is this consultant going to look at also making a recommendation on what happens when a development can't meet the parking standards? And would there be an in lieu fee, for example, being collected for a future parking structure?
I do believe, actually, the in lieu fee provision is in here. But I can't remember if I actually included that in this or not. But yeah, I would, again, anticipate kind of that parking demand being as part of a recommendation on the parking demand strategies. You know, if we do have a use that goes in that is requiring more than they can do, would we do the in lieu fee? And then that does kind of get into the larger, you know, City of St. Louis, for instance, has a whole parking division, and they manage public parking and the parking structures in downtown. So that would kind of bleed into that. And I've tried to leave it open to where they can make those recommendations as well. We've heard in the past, for instance, in the Village where we have free parking, maybe we do charge something for it. So maybe it's something like that. For instance, down on Grand Avenue, as we see the redevelopment starting to occur, if they can't meet it on site based on what they are proposing, maybe they can pay a $40,000, $50,000 in lieu fee per you know, per two spaces or per three spaces, and we actually start working toward that type of consolidated parking model. So I think at this point I've tried to leave it open for all of those different possibilities.
And in addition, not only in the work scope talking about parking counts, let's say, for different uses and everything, but I'm thinking there would be exhibits that would follow as well in terms of percentages and like actual dimensioned of stalls, like a dimension of a compact stall if we're going to allow compacts, dimension of a smart vehicle, for example, motorcycle, bicycle, you know, actually have physical dimensions, yeah, for backup as well as parking stall dimensions.
Yeah, absolutely.
In our standards.
Absolutely. And some of those exhibit, and that's kind of what I mentioned at the last meeting too, in trying to figure out how much of this work will a consultant do versus how much work will can we do as city staff. So mapping and exhibits and things like that, we do have a GIS technician, we might be able to actually do that part of the work effort in-house to try and save some of that cost. But absolutely, I agree that whatever they end up recommending, and again, I mean, you're absolutely right. It could be, you know, we recommend you do allow for some compact cars, or you actually make your parking stalls bigger, your backup space slightly bigger for future projects going forward. I think at this point it's kind of a blank slate. We're just eager to see what the consultant has to say.
Vice Chair Keane.
Thank you. This has been one of my gripes for a long, long time. I think when we decided as a small community that we needed to not require as many parking spaces and try to get people on walking and bicycling and taking the bus, public transportation, I think that was a movement in the wrong direction. For a community our size, it hasn't worked, and now we have put ourselves in a situation where the parking is in a bad state. We have projects that meet all the codes, meet the requirements that we have done, and you can't park. And when I go through here and look at the land use and the economic development section and all that, and they all refer to cutting down parking. It's not working in our community. It is just, so that has been my gripe for a long, long time. Now then, one of the things that concerns me, when we get a consultant and it comes from an area that doesn't realize what's happened here, he's going to recommend doing the same darn thing. And that's just not acceptable to what I think this community deserves. Anyway, that's my point on that. And one of the other things that I've complained about for a long, long time is parking in just single-family dwellings. We're saying, you know, our two covered parking spots in the garage is sufficient. And it's not, because that's not what garages are used for. And for us to cut down and not make parking, even in residential, that needs to be addressed as much as this commercial parking. We talk about these projects that have shared parking. There are a couple of them that are drastic failures, and some of them have worked fine. But it's like Commissioner Mack said, how do we know what's going to go in there on this shared parking situation? And I think we need to look at the ratios, the floor area ratios, the square footage for a number of parking. I'm not sure that that's up to date to meet our community. And that's the reason that we're under parking, is because maybe the square footage needs to be changed, the number of spots for so many square feet. And I know the developers don't want to furnish parking, but to me it's a backwards thing. if I go to a new place a couple of times and can't park, I won't go there anymore. And it looks like the merchants would realize if they don't have sufficient parking that it hurts their business. It may save them a little money on development because they get a bigger store or less parking square footage and all that. But I think it works backwards. I won't shop at Trader Joe's or that whole place over there because the parking is so daggone bad. So that's just an example. Now, there's some places that shared parking has worked fine. So I think those are the things we need to kind of address. And I'm not sure that we are ever be able to in our community, get people not to drive to shop. It just is not going to happen. It's just our town isn't laid out that way. And so that's my comments.
It's like that movie L.A. Story where he gets in his car and drives next door and gets out of his car. I really believe that's unfortunately how our community here operates. Not that that's ideally what we would want. That just happens to be what it is. My question for you is, do we have a timeline? Like, what is the, if we were to put a timeline and map it out, the process to find a consultant and then the time that the consultant will take to do what the company needs to do, and then the time they take to present it back to us, and then what is the process once they are done? Do they present it to, does it go to all the different commissions, or does it just go to city council? I guess I'm trying to understand from start to finish, what are we looking at, 2, 3, 4 years out? You know, if I feel like if we don't have a deadline, if we don't have some sense of urgency, we're continually having projects come before us that don't meet our, at least for the commission, parking standards, but they meet the city's parking standards. So this is my question, is a timeline.
Yeah, I don't have necessarily a timeline associated with this scope of work right now. Obviously, beginning of this year, I brought a timeline forward of what I thought I could do, and then got the flu, was out for 2 weeks, fell behind at work, and now here we are today. What I've seen on other studies is typically a 12 to 24-month period. It would depend, number one, on what after tonight, after the comments that we hear, if the commission wants to bring this, you know, have staff make modifications and bring this back for a second look, if you want to just make your comments and then, you know, have staff move forward and prepare an RFP and go out to bid, depends on how costly it is. As I mentioned in response to Commissioner Fowler Payne at the last meeting, it could be, you know, we see those numbers all over the place. I'd like to try and keep it low as we talked about, trying, you know, in light of, you know, the city's budget. But it is something that the council prioritized and told us to go seek services for. So I would anticipate probably springtime, probably kicking off the project once we put the RFP out, let it sit out there for a while, get the responses back, evaluate those responses, make a selection, make the recommendation, and award the contract. I would say probably springtime would be when we would start getting counts, which is actually kind of right, the perfect time, because then when you're doing your surveys, you do kind of want to get those peak season hours. So summertime could be when we're getting those counts done, and then get recommendations back in the fall. And I would anticipate bringing it back through at minimum the Planning Commission prior to going to the council, because it would be a change to the development code, so it would need your review and recommendation moving forward.
So I know that City Council had put it on their agenda as a top priority, and I don't know if there was a budget set for a consultant. What I find is when, and I'm just using personal knowledge, so let's say I want to remodel my house, right? I come up with this wish list and it's beautiful, and then I go and I take it out to bid and I realize I can't afford half of it, and then I have to decide what's the priority. So when we're looking at this scope here, I almost think that we need to prioritize the scope so that when we do take it out to bid, we can have an ABC bid, and they can say, okay, well, if you want it all, it's going to be this much. But if we don't have that knowledge ahead of time and they come back with a bid that's outrageous, then we go back to the drawing board. So if we know ahead of time that, you know, we have a priority ABC and we have to do it in stages, I believe that if we do it in stages, it's better than not doing it at all versus, you know, taking it back to city staff and having city staff do it, which we know that right now that's not even an option. So I just want to make sure that however we go about doing this, that we do it in a pretty strategic way so that it actually does get done, because 24 months is a long time and a lot of projects are going to get approved in that time, and our city's only so big, so we only grow so fast. So those are just my comments, but thank you. I appreciate you bringing it up.
As we spoke at the previous meeting, I think I kind of said it's a good thing and a bad thing that we had no dollar figure associated with this, because it does kind of give us flexibility to choose, you know, what are the community's priorities in terms of if the surveys are the most important piece, or, you know, if, speaking of surveys, if we want to do the see where they park and follow them into the store survey, or if we just want to do the stand of the driveway kind of survey, I would anticipate the RFP going out and kind of requesting a response in a menu format. So this task and this subtask would be X amount of dollars, and then this subtask would be Y amount of dollars, so that we can kind of play around with that, so to speak. But any recommendations from the commission on kind of prioritizing the tasks and the subtasks, or if there's things that aren't on here that you want to put in there and you want to prioritize those, by all means, feel free.
I love that idea of having the a la carte pricing structure.
Can I ask a question?
Vice Chair Keane?
When the consultant comes back with a ordinance or plan or whatever we're going to do, does that mean that if it contradicts something in the circulation element or the land use element or whatever, does that mean we have to go change that policy in the land use?
So I was going to answer, but it looked like Teresa was reaching over the microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. If this study comes back and it includes parking, results in parking regulations or policies that may counter existing policies in the plan, then we would recommend to modify those policies to rectify that inconsistencies at the time the new recommendations are proposed for approval. We certainly need consistency in our policy documents and our regulation that's required by law.
Thank you.
And that was actually one thing that I forgot to mention in response to Commissioner Mack, too, was under the Task 3, the recommendation section, we could actually include in there those recommended where the consultant sees the policies conflicting. We could ask for recommendations on those as well. So, but as Director McClish mentioned, they do need to be consistent throughout the general plan and all the other policy documents as well.
Thank you.
Can I ask one question? If this study goes out and like we were discussing, you know, you could have many projects coming back through, can there be a restriction on exceptions or variances? Because I know we're doing exceptions to the standards on some of those parking in the subdivisions. So if it's going to take a year or two to get the parking standards updated, can you place, I hate to use the word moratorium, can you place a restriction on an exception or a variance for parking standards based on the fact that we're doing a parking evaluation? I know in the past when you had items come forward on planning issues, if the design guidelines were being updated, you couldn't deviate from them. So I would think that this could fall under that same.
I would say theoretically that's possible. I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend, given the knowledge that this is an ongoing study, when you have requests before you to deviate or to exercise a provision for a reduction in parking, that you consider that in your discretionary approval. Just like you saw earlier this evening, you expressed a concern regarding parking for development. That development was modified and brought back with additional parking. I would suggest that going forward, that continue to be an opportunity for you, because these are discretionary. Most, you know, the development proposals are discretionary actions before you. If you feel that these, if it's underparked, then you would not be able to make a finding for approval. But you have to work together as a commission to do that.
Well, taking into consideration the developer's cost and expense, I just feel that that should be recommended at the planning intake, instead of letting them go out and spend all this money doing a development plan to come before us and find that it's not acceptable. Then he's got to go away and change it and then come back before us again. So if it could be caught at the planning stage and told them, you know, we're in the process of redoing our parking standards and an exception or variance to those standards isn't acceptable at this time.
Certainly we can advise applicants, incoming applicants, when they're initially applying for projects or pre-applications. We have been doing that. We've been notifying them of the commission concerns regarding parking reductions. So it is up to this commission and how to go about that, whether we want to continue strongly advising or raising a red flag concerning potential parking reductions as they're going forward with projects during the time the study is underway. You, of course, have some discretion in your approvals. And I would have to bring back a method or advise if you wanted to take actually a more significant step of disallowing any reductions for a time period. We would have to come back and see what form that would take.
Do you have any other comments?
No.
Okay. Commissioner Martin?
Thank you. Just a few here. First, I caution my fellow commissioners to attempt to predict the results of the survey or predict what consultants may be coming back with before they're allowed to do the survey. The second comment I would make is that rather than assume the consultants will be interviewing planning commissioners and traffic commissioners and city council, I would like to get that either encourage or require that they speak with us. I think that's going to be a critical aspect, not only counting cars and counting spaces, but we're sitting here, and I know that there's some very strong opinions that are felt. I fully expect that their own independent strong opinions are carried and held by those that sit on the Traffic Commission and on City Council. And I'm encouraged / require the consultant to make sure that they're including some of these concerns and ideas from the Traffic Commission in their deliberations, and how that might impact, you know, some of the results of their survey. So things that we hope and wish and expect to be included are, in fact, reasonable attempts are made to fulfill those expectations, so we don't come back at a future time, well, how come no one ever thought about, you know, X, Y, or Z on the Predator project? I also think that it's an important aspect of our responsibilities in reviewing projects that come before us today to be evaluating all the exceptions that are being requested, whether it's a PUD or it's a parking or, you know, density and zoning and all those things. Virtually every project that we see has a request for an exception or a variance of some kind. Some may be minor, some may be other than minor. And I think that's an important aspect of what we do. I certainly, in my deliberations, attempt to look at what are some of the future impacts of that, and hopefully making decisions that are good decisions for today and tomorrow. Certainly recognize that parking is an ongoing issue, will continue to be an ongoing issue, dealing with, I'm going to say, green belts and trees and protection of those are going to continue to be an issue. And I, for one, am confident that I and my fellow commissioners can evaluate and determine on our own those exceptions that need to be made at those times, even during this period while we're under surveying and looking at, you know, changes to the, you know, the parking standards. I think the hope of any developer and the hope of any community is that the percentage of exceptions remains fairly low and that the standards make sense to both the developers and the members of the community. So those exceptions that we end up looking at and end up evaluating are appropriate and reasonable. And that'd be my hope, is that the results of this survey would come up with some what I would call kind of reasonable standards and reasonable expectations for the vast majority of projects that are coming across the desk there at City Hall. My last comment is, good job, let's move forward and don't dally. Thanks.
Commissioners, have anything else to add? Mac?
I have another comment. Okay. Under collecting available data. I think we're definitely on the right track. But one thing I think that's going to be important is that we involve the public. And I'm thinking a workshop is a really good idea to be able to collect data real quick and let the community fill out a little survey or one sheet thing with what they'd like to see or what they'd like to see change or a problem area. Because you can get a lot of information real quick just by having a couple hour meeting with the public.
So I see that we're requesting for standards to include dimensions and exhibits in their recommendations. I don't know how to word it, strongly request or mandate that they speak with commissioners during the discovery period. And Commissioner Martin had mentioned the traffic, City Council, and Planning Commission, public workshops, surveys, and then I encourage staff to prioritize the scope so that when we do get a bid back from the consultant, you'll have already an idea of ABC as far as your list of importance. Do the commissioners wish to add anything to that?
No? The only request that staff would make is that on the prioritization piece, if there is any strong feelings from the commission on which item is, I mean, obviously it's all important in the overall parking study project itself, but anything in particular that's standing out, or if you have no recommendation on priorities at this time, then we can try for the kind of a la carte menu and try and do it ourselves.
A priority for me would be housing. We get a lot of projects come before us that ask for a deviation in parking for housing, so that echoing what Vice Chair Keene had said, the two-car parking garage really doesn't hold two cars because we don't use our garages for that matter. So that would be a priority for me. The commissioners wish to add any priorities?
No. Well, I have a concern about in the past they've been able to use the off-site parking, the street parking, as part of their parking density for their overall guest parking or whatever you want to call that. And I don't think that that's what street parking is really designed for. If you're going to have a development and you need to have, you're going to have guests, then you should have a percentage of parking area that's designated for guest parking and not consider it just to be on the street. Because then if people aren't parking in their garage and some of these projects don't have driveways, they're parking on the street. So then you're back to the no guest parking and everything gets impacted. So I think on the subdivisions, they should be required to have guest parking and not be considered the street as guest parking.
And so can you clarify for me, are you talking standard lot subdivisions, or are you talking like we saw earlier this evening, kind of the more compact residential developments?
I'm talking about any time you're asking for exception to design guidelines, or and it wouldn't just be exception for parking. It, you know, when you decrease the size of the overall project site or parcel site, then you've increased the need for additional parking. And I didn't want to name specific, but you know, when you have a a project that's a development plan and you've already asked for exceptions to increase the density, even though you're saying, oh yeah, they've got two parking spaces there, and then they've got, but they don't have guest parking. I mean, the ones we, without saying the name, but the ones that we just did with the alley, you've decreased the number of available parking spaces that you have for your guests because you don't have a driveway. Yeah, you have two car garage, and you know, maybe they've got the garage parking Gestapo out there, but you've decreased your guest parking in your driveway. So if you're not going to have a driveway, then you need to increase your visitors parking someplace else, because that's usually what your driveway is used for, your visitors parking. So if you don't have the driveway and people are, maybe it's a two-car garage but they only get one car in there, they're parking the other car on the street, so now you don't have guest parking on the street. So you know, where do these people park? And unless we require that there is a designated guest parking area. And there's, you know, you can go to the, I don't even know what that senior place is over there on James Way. When you drive around through there and circulate through there, they don't have driveway. They have garages. They don't have driveways, but they have guest parking areas. And I went down Ash Street and was looking at the other PUDs that were down there that have, they have garages and they have the driveways circulating through there. And then they have designated guest parking spaces, or visit, they call them visitors parking. So I think staying with that, and more importantly, when we do the exception for the driveways, then they need to be able to provide additional on-site parking that's not curbside.
Yeah, and I would anticipate that coming from this study as well, those kinds of recommendations on, yeah. Because currently, right now, we don't count, for instance, on a standard single-family lot, we don't count the driveway as parking. It's in our code that way. The recommendation might be, if you have a driveway that can accommodate a vehicle, you count that as guest parking. But if you make it to where it can accommodate a vehicle, then you have to provide a designated guest parking space. So I would anticipate some discussion on that coming from this study.
Well, I'm just saying, because if you go to visit your friend,
yeah,
2 miles away, and their driveway's empty and their cars are parked in the garage, you park in their driveway.
Yep.
That's, yeah, your visitor's so, parking space.
Yeah, I would anticipate that coming from this.
Yeah.
Did you need anything else from us regarding this item?
From my standpoint, you've provided some additional information to put in here, how we accomplish some of that, such as the individual meetings with Traffic Commission and Planning Commission and Council. We might try and do maybe a joint workshop type of forum where we could do the public polling as well. So we'll look at some of those different options. I'm not hearing any strong preference from the Planning Commission one way or another to make those edits and bring it back or just move forward with it, other than Commissioner Martin mentioning move forward.
So are you saying that once you get somebody in line, or maybe two or three people, you know, consistently, hopefully you get three, that we're not going to see what their recommendations are, or can it come back to us to see what their design or their scope of work was going to be outlined?
I could look into that, knowing particularly after last meeting that was kind of a preference of the commission, but we'll have to take a look at the public bidding process and all of that to see what is and isn't appropriate at that point. So, but this draft scope of work, coming back to you, it could, or we could move forward with it and see what happens from there.
It's my opinion that we just move forward with it. I believe that you have a pretty good grasp of what the Planning Commission is requesting, and I don't believe it needs to be drawn out and brought back to us for another revision. Did the commissioners, are you okay with that, or did
well,
you
isn't
need
that
it to
what
come
the
back?
Study session would be to outline what the requirements are going to be or the need?
I would anticipate the study session type of thing to come after the consultant selected. So, that would be my response to that.
Well, we could get in another situation where we only had one consultant put a bid in to redo the firehouse, the hearing chambers. So, you know.
Yes.
If we do run into an issue regarding unresponsive proposals, then we'll come back to the commission. We will reject those and rescope. But I foresee we should get some pretty competitive proposals from this.
Okay. I think we'll move on then to item 10. This is a notice of administrative decision since November 1st, 2016, and we had four items that were decided upon. Did the commissioners have any questions or comments regarding any of these items?
I just have a single, I think, question or just point of clarification on the last one down there. It shows an individual, Ms. Zirion, I think is her name, bought a charity bingo. In looking at that address, I believe that's the Lutheran Church. Is she just the human representative of the church that's doing the charity bingo? And this isn't just an individual like Glenn Martin going out and wanting to run a Glenn Martin charity bingo at his home?
No, I believe she's the figurehead of the nonprofit organization that was doing the bingo at the Lutheran Church.
Correct? Okay. It's just when you look at it, it looks like Pam Zirion is doing a charity bingo event. And I don't know whether we can add that into the applicant line or something, but just as a point of clarification that we have a legitimate charity doing legitimate charitable work. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to commission communications. Did the commissioners wish to communicate anything this evening to staff or to each other? Vice Chair Keene.
Our code enforcement officer now that works for the police department, what is his scope about other how much can he do? I mean, does he just do signs? Does he go around and do yard sales? Does he inspect construction projects that are not permitted, or what is his time scope?
We have two part-time neighborhood services officers, so we somewhere several years ago changed the titles from code enforcement to neighborhood services. They work out of the police department, but in conjunction with community development, our building permit technician actually helps coordinate some of the intake of complaints and inputs them into the system and helps coordinate that with the police department. Their work is prioritized essentially from the commanders, but we have neighborhood services meetings generally monthly, sometimes bi-monthly, to address kind of emerging topics, or certainly cases that involve health and safety will take precedence. I do not think there's an adopted percentage of time that routinely is spent on specific areas. So there'll be some parking involvement, to address parking concerns. They'll be, you know, and then it's sort of whatever is coming up, whether it's sign issues or hoarding issues or whatever the complaints may be. They do not inspect, they do not conduct building inspections or public works inspections. They haven't to date necessarily routinely covered stormwater or water conservation issues, although they are out and about, and so they will help us educate folks out there regarding particular requirements for as concerns illicit discharges, for example, or no water Wednesdays as another example. So that's sort of the makeup of our neighborhood services crew.
Thank you.
Any other commissioners?
Are they the same ones that visit your house if you have a vacation notice filled out?
Yes.
They do that. So.
Vice Chair Keene, did you have any more?
Yeah. This memorandum about the oak trees on Ash Street, I was going through and noticing that there's only one letter in here that's CC'd to you. And I thought that the public the public works director should be at least keeping the planning department in the loop on what's going on with some conditions that we put on a project. And I don't know whose department it is, but I think that Jeff ought to be sending all these kind of correspondence about something like that through the community development department.
Absolutely. And I will say that Director English does try and send the letters to the responsible planner. So sometimes it's myself, sometimes it's Kelly, sometimes it's Teresa, sometimes it's Sam, our planning tech. Sometimes he sends it to myself when it's actually Kelly's project. So we are in close coordination with them on these types of things.
Yeah. But we've got the letters here and the CCs. There's only one of this whole stack that actually went to community development. And that kind of disappoints me because I think that your department should be involved in something as important as this.
Yeah, and oftentimes we will get them even if we're not included on there. It'll be you should see this, and he'll give us a copy of it as well. So.
And I'm not sure if Mr. King was here at the meeting, but we did make a motion. We directed staff to actually put this on an agenda as an item so we can discuss it publicly. And my question was, can we have it on the next agenda? I would hate for it to get too far, and they're building homes already, and we need to get it on sooner than later.
Yeah, so the direction at the last Planning Commission meeting was the next available agenda. Obviously, with the first public hearing item, given the public comment that happened at the first meeting to now, we were a little unsure about how long that item would take. So we do try and judge that, but we will try and get it on the next available agenda.
And then this whole issue has spurred a whole discussion, I think, amongst planning commissioners. And what do we do when conditions of approval, for whatever reason, don't get followed or get neglected or don't follow through? I like to see it come back to a planning commission when things go awry and don't happen according to plan. I think we need to be involved.
We have done that for uses in the past, infrequently. Usually we try to attend to them at the staff level. So it really has been a case-by-case basis on the nature of the condition that wasn't adhered to. But certainly you'll have an opportunity here as directed by you regarding the trees, illegal tree removal, and certainly staff can bring to your attention conditions of approval that are not met. Those may occur, if they occur while the project is under construction, that's when a lot of this happens. We'll have points at building permit issuance where we can withhold until something's rectified. The more difficult ones are when the project's constructed and up and running, and then somewhere down the line something occurs that's in contrary to a condition of approval. And those we generally rely on a complaint that comes to our attention. So yes, we have in the past, and we will continue to schedule any items before you if it raises to the level where we can't get resolution and we are faced with a potential issue with the project not operating within the conditions that were part of their approval.
I guess my question is, it's subjective right now, and it's subjective based on opinion. Does it require a policy that gets passed that from City Council saying when things, have to go, when does an applicant know that they have to go back before us? When there's changes to the project?
Generally, we'll, if it's something that we have not been able to rectify through code compliance operations, we'll bring it to the city attorney's attention. And if it's in consultation with the city attorney's office, we may require the project to come back before the commission for a revocation hearing. A revocation hearing is an opportunity to revoke a permit, but it's very has very specific steps laid out by code. I can't recollect the time where we have, at least offhand, where we've actually had to revoke a conditional use permit, at least in recent years, but we do have that opportunity in the code. It would have to be done in close consultation with the city attorney's office.
I'm in agreement with Commissioner Mack. We belabor these conditions of approval, and sometimes a project only gets approved because we've added conditions of approval. And if there's no ramifications for those conditions of approval actually being met, then it kind of nullifies our job. So if the developer does not understand ahead of time what those ramifications are for not meeting those conditions of approval, then we're almost in a pickle because they can say, oh, well, what are my ramifications? There was nothing told to them ahead of time. So going back to what Commissioner Mack, I think, is alluding to is, at what point do we need to have something in writing that they know it can't just be a slap on the hand and, oh, pay a small fine? Because to a developer, $1,000 can be a very small fine to get what they want when we're trying to preserve this big, beautiful oak tree. So I don't know if that's something that you can look into and maybe give us some options when we do discuss this item. I just feel like we need something that the developer knows, either if you don't meet these conditions of approval, you don't get your permit. I understand that. But it has to be, if there's different categories almost, they need to be marked somehow so they know what the ramifications are for not meeting those conditions of approval. It can't just be a willy-nilly on a per line item basis.
Certainly, the measure that is generally used is whether they're in substantial conformance with their approval, and that includes all the conditions that were included in their permit that was issued, or the construction and that occur. That substantial conformance finding, is fairly routinely visited by staff as a project is constructed, and sometimes we do bring those back to you. If a project has been constructed and is operating, then it then it's a matter of a potential revocation, and that's when that procedure is held. In some instances, for example, tree removals, the municipal code indicates exactly what you should do, and then in this case, it was a fine. So that's sort of where we have this potential issue. Your commission is saying it's not operating in terms in consistent with the conditions of approval. The code has a separate provision for a specific fine for an illegal tree removal, and that's why we're here in the quandary before you.
So is that something that we need to address during our conditions of approval? There are times where we literally spend a half hour discussing a tree. And I'm not talking about the project that's going to be on the agenda next time. I'm just saying in general, there are times when we spend so much time to make sure that we preserve. We drive to the site, we look at the lot, and I know I'm just using the tree because that's going to be what we're discussing. But if it's in the municipal code that it's just a fine and the developer knows that, then we really... I guess it doesn't make sense for us to belabor and tell them they have to make sure they don't remove that tree, because a fine to them may not even be an issue.
Well, couldn't you, on your conditions of on our approval of the conditions, we have to be more specific? But the thing is, if these deviations or negligence to follow the guidelines are coming up and we don't know about it, and you guys are resolving it, then we're not aware that we need to spend or be more specific on our conditions of approval. Because I would say that, you know, if we said this tree is not to be removed, and it gets removed, but if we had stated on there, if you remove this, you're in jeopardy of losing your conditional use permit, and not saying that it's a fine, because then we would know that we've clearly stated it on there that they're going to be in trouble if they take the tree down, and they know it because it's on those conditions of approval, and not that, oh, if I take the tree down, okay, I'll pay the $1,000 fine and move on my way, and I'm happier, and
I tend to agree. I agree with Fowler.
But if we don't know what you guys are taking care of, I mean, even if you just give us a list, you know, like your administrative decisions, that this person was given an exception to whatever it was, and which wasn't in substantial conformance to the conditions of approval, then the next time we would know to be more specific on that condition.
Just a couple clarifications. I think this is a good opportunity to make sure we can revisit the wording, especially as regards trees, because of this issue that's been brought to light. I just wanted to clarify, if a project is found not to be in substantial conformance, then I do certainly schedule it before the commission. And that's approval is not continued. So just wanted to make that clarification.
I would to reiterate on what Fowler Payne had just explained. The municipal code, yeah, it's set up for a fine, but that's for the homeowner that cuts down a tree without getting a permit, or so-and-so, you know, removed a tree and didn't know. When we have a conditional use permit and we have all this tree information, arborist reports, and a project approval, that's a violation of the conditional use permit. That's just not a fine that you throw out from the municipal code.
Yeah, and we'll have that opportunity in the future meeting date to clarify that and what that means for a project under construction.
And if I can just chime in my own two cents on this as well, I'm just cautious in how we proceed, because the Planning Commission in and of itself is not an enforcement agency of the city. With that being said, I'm reluctant to want to start, I'm going to say, looking over the shoulder or reviewing and looking at every tree and parking space and paint color that goes onto structures in the community. With that being said, it's obvious that there appears to be a need to review, clarify, and perhaps even amend some of these, you know, the building codes and some of the other codes related to that. I'm in agreement that this specific tree that was a significant aspect in the, or trees, there were more than just one, but a number of trees on this specific project became a significant issue as part of the conditions. And I am concerned that the existing codes may not be either adequate or appropriate in order to respond to a violation of this type. So I'm certainly in favor of, you know, reviewing and looking at some of the building codes and stuff and some of the issues that were raised with this incident. But I'm cautious to want to start getting into an enforcement position as a planning commissioner. I think that we have a pretty full load to carry, and I just have faith, you know, that the city staff and the codes as potentially amended are there to deal with that, and if we need to amend them, as I think we probably need to in this case, they're handled in that capacity rather than us coming in as an enforcement agency.
And certainly what I'm hearing is what alternatives are out there so this doesn't happen again.
Yes.
I have one question, and it has nothing to do with a specific tree being removed. But when we have a condition on there for a replacement of trees, are they required to be within the city jurisdictional boundaries, or can they do them outside of the boundaries? And I think I mentioned that when we were talking the other day, that so you say a tree is taken down and you're required to put three oak trees someplace else. But then another project comes forward and they've got trees that are less than the whatever the minimum size of the trunk is, and they say, oh, well, these trees aren't, you know, historic, they're not X size, and they cut them down for that project. How do we monitor that those trees, those replacement trees that are put on another site, aren't cut down because they don't meet the minimum size of the trunk? How do we monitor keeping those trees?
It's a good question, and it's very specific to our tree mitigation policy. And before we could go down that particular path, if we may address that at a future meeting when we can notice it and folks can understand that that's going to be talked about.
I was trying to keep the discussion more broad when it comes down to conditions of approval for a project. Let's just remove the tree out of the picture. I'm going to use another example. What happens when we condition a project that says you need one guest stall with each unit, and the applicant comes through and only provides maybe one guest stall for half the units? That's not in conjunction with the conditions of approval. In my mind, it needs to come back to Planning Commission. So in general terms, when the conditions aren't being followed, that the public's seeing, that we've created certain conditions based on public testimony and information that's all been provided, the conditions need to stick or they need to come back.
Yeah, in that example, before they're signed off for occupancy or their stage of their building permit, we would say that's not in substantial conformance and have them rectify it before we went to the next stage. The issue becomes after it's constructed, after they got their everything, their occupancy, then they cover up, they put a shed on top of that guest parking stall. That's something we would presumably run into. That's kind of that's the state where we have more difficulty enforcing the regulations. Not that it can't be, but it's just harder.
Thank you very much. I know that that was a pretty in-depth conversation that needed to be had. So we'll move on to staff communications.
I thought that's what we were doing.
We're on commissions.
And nothing more from staff.
My fault.
Okay. Then I move that we adjourn tonight's meeting.
Second.
Aye.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries.